Thank you, Eric Lamb, for joining us today on Flute Unscripted.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a real treat. Thanks.
I wanted to just get to know more about you and chat with you. And I basically just want to know all about your start on the flute and how you came to have the career that you have today, which is extremely versatile.
That's a big question.
So basically, I mean, you're born in Detroit, right? And then mm-hmm. you went to Oberlin. You've lived in New York, New Zealand, Vienna. You've kind of done it all, been all over the world. So where is home for you right now? Where are you? And are you feeling rooted at the moment? Do you feel like you found, you know, your quote unquote home, or are you open to exploring opportunities wherever they take you?
Now I live in Vienna. This is where I've lived for the last 7 years, with a little bit of a break to teach in New Zealand, but I was sort of going back and forth anyway, just because it sounds ridiculous to say that someone is like going back and forth between Vienna and New Zealand. But yeah.
That's easy travel.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I've aged so much through that. All those flights. But it was just quite necessary for my work to do that. It was a good experience for me. But Vienna is home. Austria is home. I moved here for love and I'm quite happy to be here. So
that's a good reason.
Yeah.
And during Austria's quarantine in 2020, you started an online project called the Red Sofa Solo Flute Recital Series.
It's right over there.
Yeah, I see it.
With my sweater today.
Yeah, you match. Did having that project kind of give you a purpose during an otherwise very tumultuous time?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, at the time, right before we had our lockdown, I have quite a few friends in Asia. And my closest friend was actually there getting married. And I sort of saw it like the wave coming in our direction. And it was clear to us that, you know, in Austria, we pretty much do whatever they do in Germany as far as like politically. And it was clear that it was in our future. And so I quickly decided that I needed something to do, you know? And pretty much like in the first week, I just set up my camera and just started recording takes of music that I had really wanted to either relearn from, you know, my studies or just sort of dig into, just because I get so busy, it's hard to play a lot of stuff, you know? And also I was sort of, as a young person, a bit of a brat. And there was like certain things I wouldn't want to learn. And so, you know what I mean? Like I was too cool for this, I was too cool for that. And as I get older and a little bit wiser, I think that's rubbish. And so there was a lot of music that I just took the time to tackle, and gave myself like a week. Like I started learning a program Monday and then recorded on Friday, and ended up being like, I haven't counted, but I think it's like 30 pieces that I learned during. So it kept me busy, kept me off the streets.
Yeah, there are a lot out there and they're great. And it's a great way to stay connected too, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Like through that project, you know, as everyone was going into a quarantine state, it was a point of intersection for a lot of my friends. It opened up a lot of conversations about how one keeps themselves sane and safe when you don't know what's really happening around you, and to just dive into music. That's what we do, and why not? So
yeah.
It was an interesting experience for me, really.
So you were one of those that kept in shape during 2020. You didn't stop practicing and go off the deep end with something else.
Yeah, I know my friends, they always say, Eric, you need to put the flute down. But it's like, it's like one of those things. It makes me, I feel better when I sound better. And it's important to me. So I would have been practicing anyway.
Right.
You know, I always am trying to find ways of new things to learn, you know, new repertoire to discover, new ways of expressing myself. And I'm a bit weird like that.
Great. And I'm not sure if any of our viewers really know the extent of your friendship with Claire Chase. I know you both are very close, and it kind of shaped the beginning of your career. You two played together, had an instant connection. She was in Oberlin. You decided you wanted to be at Oberlin too, so you went there. Can you talk about the relationship you two have and what it's like to have a flutist as a very close friend? Is it competitive? Is it is there sometimes tension, or is it always fantastic?
It's, you know, with Claire, it's interesting. I mean, we sort of ran into each other like in a cosmic sort of, you know. I don't know how, why we ended up in the same place, but it was a fun, magical, youthful experience. You know, I think we were 18 when we first met. And up until that point, I thought I was the greatest flutist on the planet. And then I was like, who is this chick? You know, I mean, no, it was great. And, you know, and we, through the years, you know, I, like you say, I did end up at Oberlin because of her. It was sort of like, you know, I was, when I finished high school, I went and studied with Ann Reynolds at DePaul University. And immediately knew that's not where I was going to land, but it was a good way for me to just sort of dive into that notion of being a professional flutist and studying music. And then I met Claire that summer after my first year in school, and it was just quite clear that I couldn't imagine going through these formative years without having her around. And she picked me up in the car. She borrowed a friend's car. She drove and picked me up. I went and played for DeBost. I filled out the application right after that. So it was a bit like
a whirlwind.
And, you know, and since then, you know, we spent that time together. We lived shortly together in Chicago when I finished my studies. And then I went on to Germany. And then she went on to create all this incredible music and this new outlet for music that wasn't a thing back then. There were no professional new music ensembles traveling and playing European music and, you know, playing everything actually. Of note, really, until she came onto the scene and created this space for us all. And then it was quite clear that at some point when I finished my studies in Germany, that that was where I'd land. And so she needed, you know, the ensemble was sort of going at this meteoric rise sort of situation. And she needed someone because she just did. And it worked out for the both of us. And it was a great time. And as far as competition and stuff like that, that's never been, first of all, I'm not that kind of person. And second of all, we're not those kind of people, aren't I? So we play a lot of the same repertoire, but there is a fork in the road as far as our interests are concerned. I think that's really helpful. You know, we don't, you know, there. I moved back to Austria after I left the ensemble, to Europe after I left the ensemble, because there were so many other things I'm really interested in. And it was sort of like the expiration date on that experience that was up. And it was time for me to sort of focus not only on myself, because, you know, imagine being in that sort of dynamic, wonderful thing in New York. I needed time to practice. Like I said, I really like to play the flute. And it was just, we were just like doing it, man. It was so much that it was hard to keep up for me personally. And to, you know, to play in a way in which I sort of pride myself on, you know, I work really hard because I have certain expectations of myself, and it became personally a little bit too much. So we went in our separate professional ways, but I spoke to her the other day on the phone, actually.
Okay. And did you, can you talk a little bit more or elaborate more on leaving ICE and, you know, why you ultimately did that? And what were some of those specific projects that were pulling you away that you wanted to focus on?
Well, with leaving ICE, what a lot of it had to do, it was a personal decision, you know, like just family. I wanted to be a normal person and live with the person I love and not have to, you know, we were meeting in Paris, we were meeting in LA. It sounds really fancy.
Exotic. Yeah.
I promise you. It's really not that exciting. But so we both decided to make a change in our lives. Because I went to Germany, it sort of made sense that we move here. And I had, while I was in New York, I sort of nurtured all of those relationships during my study time in Germany. And it sort of made sense to, I was also easily able to sort of reinsert myself into a lot of different playing in orchestra. I love, you know, recording. I'm very fortunate to have a close connection to a media company now that supports my recording projects. And all those things were not possible because I just did not have time to do them.
Sure.
So,
sure.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit more about Germany and your time there. You got your master's and soloist diploma there. You studied with the American flutist, Thaddeus Watson in Frankfurt.
Yeah.
So what was that teacher-student relationship like? How did you two meet, and what, you know, morsels of advice has he given you that you've carried with you forever?
Yeah, that's actually a super interesting story. It's still to this day is sort of like, I don't know where, how the stars aligned in this way, but when I was, I'll tell you, I'll start from the beginning and I'll make it quick. When I was in high school, I spent a summer studying with Kujala at Northwestern. They had, I don't know if they still have this, NHSMI is called National High School Institute of Music. And it was wonderful. I spent 9 weeks with Kujala. As a high school student, it was brilliant. And I thought that I wanted to go there. I didn't end up there, but he sort of came back into my life after I finished Oberlin. I moved to Chicago and was having private lessons with him and Mary Stolper. And I knew that I wanted to continue studying. And I knew that I, after speaking to DeBose about this, he really felt strongly that I should pursue studies in Europe generally, and Germany specifically, because they had still now have so many great institutions and so many great teachers. So in a lesson with Kujala, I mentioned it to him. He said it was a good idea. And I have a former student who's somewhere in Germany. And he pulls out his big book because the orchestra CSO had been in Cologne, and Thaddeus had gone to see him. And he named me all the, you know, he gave me the names of his children before I even met him. It was super weird. And so I went home, I called my mom. I have an aunt who was somewhere in Germany playing in an orchestra. And I emailed her and she says, we were colleagues in the orchestra in Frankfurt.
Oh my God.
And I was like, all right. So back in the day, flying wasn't so incredibly expensive. And so I booked a flight. I contacted him and spoke to DeBose, and he gave me a list of teachers to consider. I applied to go study in Frankfurt, where he had a class. He's recently retired, that is. And we just sort of clicked. And it was great because I was able to live with my family. The transition to living in Germany was a quite easy one for me. And also Frankfurt is a very international city. So there were a lot of English speaking people.
Yeah.
So it was a really easy transition. And, you know, Thaddeus and I, we have, it's not always been easy, because I don't think I was the easiest of students, quite opinionated, as you can imagine. but, you know, he and, you know, I, we had a personal conflict because I wasn't really an orchestral career, which it was hard for him to fathom, because that's what he did his whole career.
Right.
And in Germany, that's what you do. And if you don't do it, then it's either you're not very good or you're insane. That's how they just think. You know, they're like, what's wrong with you? Yeah. And I mean, this is literally what I was told. So it was quite difficult for me, but I was able, because he just let me do me and sort of corrected a few things that he saw that I needed to sort of think about, and just gave me opportunities and didn't stop me from doing the things that I wanted to do. And fortunately enough, in Germany, there's so many opportunities, from chamber music to, you know, I won a couple of competitions, and, you know, sort of snowballed. And, you know, at one point I was more busy than he was, as he himself said. But he gave me a real sort of strong view of understanding how it is to live as a professional musician. And how to be a nice person, and how that letting not only your prowess as an instrumentalist and musician, but also your human side help guide you through and navigate your way through. I have these experiences where I get on a train and I go and play for a week with a group of people I've never met in my life.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of openness that you have to sort of come to the table with in order to make those sorts of situations work. And for me, it's the best, because then I can leave and I don't have to have the drama. I can leave and they can all love me. so that was a really important experience for me. Also being part of a very dynamic musical atmosphere, environment, you know, like being able to get on a train and go somewhere and play, and then then the next week go somewhere else. And it was, mm-hmm. it still is exciting for me. And without that experience and without him being so open to just letting me be myself, I don't think I would have been able to so easily navigate my way into the kind of career that I've sort of patchworked for myself.
But did you always know that this patchwork was something that was an ultimate goal of yours? I mean, it seems like you said you're very opinionated and you think outside of the box for a lot of things. And it sounds like you always knew that really like a straight and narrow career path on the orchestral track was never really for you. So did you just have kind of like a wing it attitude, like, well, I'll see what opportunities come my way? Or did you have a clear plan in place for the career that you have today?
I think there was a point in which it sort of all started to come together. But at the very beginning, like every young head in the sky flute player, I just would do what everyone told me to do. And I was just taking auditions left and right. I mean, I have a list of all, it's like a serial killer's list. It's crazy. It's like, it's huge. I was everywhere. You know, because in Germany at the time, I don't know how it is now, but I moved to Germany in 2001 and I was taking, I mean, at one point when I started getting invitations, which is its own situation, but once I started getting invited for auditions, I was taking auditions every week, sometimes twice a week. And that really messes with your psychology, you know, because it doesn't really make any sense. You go and you play great. And then the next day you play great, but you don't get anywhere. You know, it's like, it was very difficult for me. I'm kind of sensitive and, you know, taking an audition and there are 100 people in a room as big as my living room. I mean,
yeah, it's a mind game as well. Yeah.
At some point it didn't interest me anymore because I saw straight through that sort of like game, you know, and it was clear to me. And it wouldn't have been clear to me if I hadn't had that like, wild amount of experience in that direction at once, you know, that like the delusion was gone really fast. And as a result, I was able to, also because I went to Oberlin, I have to admit, like being at Oberlin where it's all good all the time and there's so many things that one can do. And, you know, quite frankly, when I was a student at Oberlin, playing in the New Music Ensemble was the coolest thing you could do. You know, nobody wanted to play in the orchestra, you know, not really. I mean, a lot of people ended up playing professionally in orchestra that I studied with back then, but most people, the cool thing to do was to sit down and play chamber music, you know, contemporary chamber music with, you had a great conductor and, you know, great people and great composers who would come. And if I had not had that experience and been inside of that sort of like oversaturated orchestral sort of mindset that sort of puts people in a pecking order. Mm-hmm. It's like, it goes back to this like, you know, hierarchical sort of thing. Like, you know, the better flutist you are, the better job you have. That it's rubbish. Yeah. That's sort of like how people end up becoming brainwashed. And yep. If I hadn't had that experience before, I don't think I would have been able to sort of like wrap my head soon enough around it. And as a result, I started looking around for all those other opportunities. And there are so many of them, you know, and became very busy. And that's when it became clear to me that this is a career path. You know, it might not be the easy one. It might not be the one that people sort of understand, but it is a viable one and it's fun and it's rich. And I've been like, you know, in opera production, standing on birthday cakes. I've, you know, like, I've done all sorts of wonderful stuff. And I mean, this is a Stockhausen opera, you know? Yeah. And I wouldn't have gotten those opportunities if I weren't open to trying these things, you know? Memorizing symphonies in, you know, 2 weeks and dancing and doing stuff like that. Like, great experiences.
Yeah.
Music, personally. You know? Yeah,
having an open mind has really served you and helped you find what you want to do.
And, you know, sometimes it's lonely, to be quite honest, because, you know, when you think like this, then like, you know, particularly when I, you know, when I got a job teaching and, you know, I have colleagues and, you know, started applying for academic positions, you know, mm-hmm. particularly in Europe, if you don't have an orchestral career, they don't know what to do with you. You know, yeah. But you know, but I can, you know, I can teach Fernihau and also Bach. So right. I think that.
Well, and speaking of teaching, I mean, now you are the lecturer of flute and head of wind, brass, percussion at Academy of Music in Vienna. Mm-hmm. So why is that a good fit for you? And why mm-hmm. do you want there?
Well, it's a small institution. It's a small private school. For me, it was important. I'm just happy to have a space where if people really want to come and study with me, they can, you know. I don't, because it's a private institution, I don't have that stress of having to have a full class, which is perfect for me because I'm still, well, technically still busy playing, I mean, these days, you know. And so it fits my lifestyle. And I feel that it's important for me now to be both active as a player and as a teacher so that I can consistently integrate and those idea notions of like what it is to be a performer now, not like how it was before or how it is in my institutional bubble, but like really how it is. And I think that's important for me and also to sort of give that on to my students. And so I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be able to take students now. And it's an incredible responsibility, you know, like, ooh. but it's, you know, it's the wonderful thing about it is like what I'm discovering, because this is my second semester only, teaching just flute. Ooh. Because before in New Zealand, I taught the New Music Ensemble, I taught improvisation, and I had a few flute students and a few who would come to me, but I didn't have this sort of like responsibility of shepherding someone through a four-year program, you know, and making sure that they're like going to class and like practicing their scales and eating properly and all these things. You
know? So, yeah, it sounds like being a parent
for
students. Yeah.
But what I've discovered and what I'm discovering is that what I put into it, I get out immediately, you know, because I find that my students, they respond to that closeness and taking them seriously. And I can't say that people who look at it that way, teaching as being that kind of responsibility, but I'm enjoying myself.
And to shift gears a little bit, I just want to talk about repertoire and a little bit of what you play. You've given world premieres of, I mean, hundreds of works, but you're also passionate about 17th and 18th century performance practice. And it might be a little bit of a strange correlation for a lot of people. So what fascinates you about both genres and why are you fascinated?
Yeah, well, I find that I function very well on the periphery of things, you know? Like, I function very well in, like, really new stuff and crazy stuff and really old stuff,
right.
You know? Like, and that there's, and I feel weirdly there's, like, that's the thing that people don't really study, you know? Like, you go through a four-year, six-year program, and it's all, the repertoire is kind of the same, you know? And when you get out, and you start thinking about what do I do now? Where do I go? Where do I focus? I've discovered that there's a wealth of information on the periphery. And that's one of the things that speaks to me. I mean, as far as contemporary music is concerned, I'm just good at it, you know? And as a result, like, you know, good rhythm, I have a lot of experience in like new notations and improvisation and extended techniques. And it pays the bills, you know, because if you can do that stuff and you can do the stuff in between anyway, then it's, you know, it makes for a very successful career. And as far as the old stuff is concerned, like, you know, unfortunately at Oberlin, I was so busy trying to just figure this out that I didn't take full advantage of every opportunity. And one thing I didn't do when I was there was I didn't learn the traverso, which is ridiculous. You know, like, I don't know why I didn't do that. And so as a result, you know, in the notion of, you know, lifelong learning, I thought, you know, why don't I just buy one? And while I was in New Zealand, I bought four because I'm crazy. and while I was in New Zealand, it so happened that one of the one of the greatest baroque flutists in the Southern Hemisphere is there. And we became very good friends, and she was my teacher for 2 years. And, you know, I sort of started autodidactically, and she sort of sorted me out and showed me exactly what the F natural does and how it functions. And then I discovered that there's so much repertoire that hasn't been recorded, hasn't been properly edited. And so I set upon a path of sort of doing some of that. And as a result, like learning through doing, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, discovered a lot of works of Kvanz and concerti of his that haven't been, you know, recorded or even edited. It's simply because the nature of the beast, like there's so, and it again, kept me off the streets, yeah. kept me busy, you know, and I learned the incredible.
I mean, what are the challenges though of recording solo repertoire? I mean, you do it a lot. You have like a quite impressive list of recordings and CDs, but a lot of it is solo. Do you feel kind of in your element playing solo? And what, are there any challenges for you? I mean, some people feel kind of exposed and vulnerable. Do you feel that way or no?
Yes.
Okay. So we're not alone. Okay.
Yeah. But you know, for me, it's important. It has always been important for me to give myself these goals. Like I want to record this repertoire because I love it. And it's easier, right? First of all, logistically. You don't have to wrangle a group of people to do anything. You know, you can go into a studio and the work that you put in is the work that what you get out of it, you know? And through these first projects, I learned a lot about the recording process itself. And as you go through it, it gets easier. And I'm sorry, my dog is like, he's going to make an appearance. Just wait.
Yeah, I hope so.
Give me that look. I learned an incredible amount. You know, it's, you know, you put together a program that's cohesive, that's interesting, the stuff that you want to do. You spend 6 months performing it, massaging it, and then you go into the studio and you just lay it down. And I've gotten really good at it. And through that, I've learned so much about my own playing, how the whole thing works, like how to get the best results in the quickest amount of time, how to practice for a recording session is very different than standing on stage and playing this stuff, you know, and like having techniques and of working so that the recording process is easy. You know, so my last CD is out, coming out this month, and it took me like no time to record it. It was like, and I was sort of a bit of a whirlwind, you know. Yeah. So it's also for me, I took it as an opportunity to learn something, and it sort of caught on.
Yeah. Yeah. When you are premiering new works and you're working with a lot of new composers, you've certainly collaborated with your fair share. What is that process like, either commissioning or, you know, working with a composer to give feedback? Mm-hmm. Is it kind of like a symbiotic relationship? Do you feel like you feed off each other and need each other?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes, no. You know, sometimes it's you get a PDF in the mail and it has, you know, a piece with your name on top of it. But it's like, you know, there was no, you know, I think the creation of every work has its own life, you know, its own genesis, you know, and sometimes it's really symbiotic. It's, you know, there he is.
Yay.
Sometimes it's really sort of symbiotic and a lot of sort of work together. Recently, I worked with a composer, Mauricio Steuernagel. He's Brazilian. And we together created a set of etudes that I premiered in the south of Austria recently. And it was a lot of work because, you know, how we decided to go about, he sent me snippets, I record them, I give him feedback, and he sent me more. And it was like an ongoing process.
Wow.
You know, that's my favorite way of working. And that's the way in which I learn the most about myself. But that's often not a luxury that I have. Particularly with things like concerti and things like that, you may get a little bit here and there, but you know, often at this point, a lot of composers who write for me know me, you know? And so, and they know my playing and they've worked with me already. And so they write things that they know that I do well, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes I have to like put the brakes on people and be like, maybe we can consider doing something else because all this stuff is starting to sound alike, you know?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a danger.
Yeah.
Flutists in particular actually fall into like a trap where you create this aesthetic bubble and you start playing you and not the music, you know? And in some cases it's wonderful because it creates a really strong personal aesthetic. But in other ways, it's sometimes a little dangerous because like when, you know, these people, they let go of this music, it's hard to actually get a real sense of it because they're so inside of it. So it's hard for the music to actually have wings and that more people play it, you know?
Right, that's interesting.
I'm careful with that.
Yeah. Well, then that kind of makes me curious. So what is what would you say is like your aesthetic that you think that composers think that you sound like, that you try to get outside of sometimes?
Yeah, I think there's two versions of that. Like there's the one that's like really technical, choppy, like Boulezian sort of like, you know, scales and stuff.
Yeah.
And mostly, and then like a lot of air sounds and stuff. Because I'm also quite good with that. Like I can do a couple things, circular breathe. I can, you know, I can do whistle tones inside the flute that a lot of people don't do that. And, you know, I sometimes am careful about showing composers like my solutions to stuff because then they start doing it and then it should become my thing.
Everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. yeah, you know, and I have to sometimes with, for instance, a very dear friend of mine is writing me a flute concerto that I'm supposed to premiere on the 20th of April, if that happens. The stress in my life is that I haven't gotten the music yet just because everyone's waiting to know if these concerts will happen. And I know we've had back and forth about, you know, how the piece is, hangs together. And, but, you know, she's written a lot of music for me and I know it'll be a lot of tongue rams.
At least you know what to mentally prepare for. you also got involved this year in a project called the Umoja Flute Institute. Can you talk about your mission with that project?
Well, you know, I think it's really, you know, it sort of all came together providentially. I mean, a lot of it had to do with the state of things as far as race is concerned in the United States. And, you know, it was wonderful because for me, when I grew up, there wasn't this like, I couldn't imagine a board of African-American flute players who have all like studied and are performing all over the world to come together. You know, when I was a student, it was Damari, really. And that was about it that I knew of at the time, or that was like, you know, that was visible.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem. And I think that still is a problem. And it's nice to be in a group of people who take that mission seriously, just that there is a outward appearance and that maybe more people would consider from certain diasporas, consider it as an option into the flute community if they see more of themselves, if it's reflected back at them. And it's a real honor to be in the midst of so many interesting people with so many interesting and diverse interests is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. So yeah, I'm very happy about that.
Well, thank you so much. This was really fascinating to speak with you and get to know you and see your dog. What's his name, by the way?
His name is Herr Professor.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, you live in Vienna, everyone has a title, everyone's an academic. He's a beagle, so he kind of looks like a professor. So.
Yeah, he just needs like spectacles, I think.
Yeah, we tried. He's not into it.
Well, he gave it a shot.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Eric. It was really a pleasure. Thank you so much.
It was really a pleasure. I really appreciate it. And looking forward to presenting this program. So
yeah, can't wait. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much.